This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The report coming out of Washington has again raised concern about the scourge of human trafficking in South Africa. According to the findings from January 2018 to December 2021, of the 754 adult victims from more than 30 countries, there were 445 South Africans. So from the 754 adult victims from more than 30 countries, there were 445 South Africans. That's more than half of that particular number. The highest number of children trafficked were also from South Africa, 59 out of 98. The results here are staggering. Yeah, look at those numbers. So how concerning are these particular numbers? We're going to, of course, be talking now to Hilary Leong. We're going to be also talking to Calvin Rafadi and Emma van der Walt. Let me just tell you some other things around human trafficking that I've got here in the kind of stats that I've got. Young girls are the most vulnerable to human trafficking in South Africa, which is, of course, a source, transit and destination country for the criminal activity worldwide. And that's according to the report. Of course, the report also from January 2018 to December 2021. That's the time frame. The collection of evidence from these sources indicate that human trafficking is indeed a serious, pervasive and systematic problem in South Africa that seamlessly interperses with other crimes and social phenomena, including gender-based violence, prostitution, organized crime, missing persons, irregular migration, child abuse and labor disputes, to name but a few. Findings from the research confirm that sex trafficking continues to account for most of both reported cases and prosecutions of human trafficking. Also, the report suggests victims and perpetrators of human trafficking are significantly undercounted in both research and practice. And then, of course, we had COVID-19 pandemic, which, of course, would just have made the numbers worse and just elevated this particular criminal activity of human trafficking. COVID-19 would have put a lot of people in distress and made them vulnerable also to, of course, the perpetrators of this particular crime. Gauteng, listen to this. Gauteng has the most cases of human trafficking, followed by KwaZulu-Natal. About 400 victims were identified in the 79 human trafficking prosecutions that were ongoing in courts during 2021. The prevalence of children being exploited in sex trade, marriage, often under the guise of traditional cultural practice, labor and domestic servitude, and other forms of exploitation are not reflected in available numbers. It also appears that, this is surprising to me also, but maybe not, it also appears that the Joburg CBD, Saxonwold, and Sandringham are the sex traffic hubs. There you go. Sex traffic hubs, Joburg CBD, Saxonwold, and Sandringham. Let me bring in the guests here tonight. Let me invite Hilary Leong. Hilary, welcome to Power 98.7. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself, Denzel? Thank you so much for inviting me onto your show.
Absolutely, Hilary. It's a pleasure, Hilary. And I'm sure we'll engage in some sad, but of course, some important numbers and issues tonight. Calvin Rafadi, forensic investigator and crime expert. Calvin, always good to see you on the show. Welcome.
Greetings, Denzel.
And that's Calvin Rafadi. He's a guest here. More often than not, he's a regular guest. Emma van der Walt, CEO of Brave to Love. Emma, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective.
Thank you, Denzel. It's a great privilege to be here. And thank you for touching on such a very pivotal, and voicing on the topic. It's very vital for our country at the moment.
Absolutely. Let me start then with you, Emma, as I introduce you to the conversation. Emma, I gave particular stats and I gave particular research. And of course, there's South Africa as a country, which is not obviously excluded from what we see happening around human trafficking. In fact, if you look at the numbers and you look at the historical context, South Africa, very, very key and amongst the highest kind of numbers, amongst the highest kind of, scenarios that are prevalent around human trafficking. I want to ask you why, but let's just first talk to the kind of research that's available, and then we'll get to why a little later on. What do you know, as CEO of Brave to Love, around the issue of, just from a helicopter perspective, from this particular issue?
Yeah, so obviously the sex trade of South Africa is obviously massive, and we don't realize because it's not being monitored. I mean, prostitution is not really being monitored. And we've seen globally 70% or more trafficking happens in commercial sex trade because of the demand of obviously commercial sex trade. And we see women becoming victims. We're seeing, and the sad thing of children then becoming victims. And I mean, we're the NGO. We're very current on working with women in prostitution, trying to help them exit, and then through that also identifying victims of trafficking. And we've seen the abuse and trauma just on our streets, and our women suffering. If we talk gender-based violence, human trafficking is the extreme, most extreme form of GBV against a woman, in slavery.
What makes South Africa such a key country? What makes South Africa sort of one of those countries where, if you look at the numbers, then we're high up there? What is it that these perpetrators find that they can actually bring their trade here, or that they can source from a country like South Africa?
So three things very importantly. Firstly, it's all about money. So South Africa and Africa is an economic hub. So obviously that's why we look at Joburg and the CBD, economic hub. People come here by, having a fake dream of working prostitution and then being trafficked into commercial sex trade. That's very important to understand. And corruption. Corruption plays a massive role in South Africa. Unfortunately, we've hands on all of our NGOs and even law enforcement. We daily deal with corruption within law enforcement, within sometimes, with the prosecutors, every area. And that just enforces the trafficker to say, listen, I'm comfortable here. I am, I have law enforcement in my pocket, so I'm paying the bribes. And it's just our women, the weaker vessel, the women that are weak, the vulnerable, are being exploited, thirdly. And then thirdly, looking at the demand. There's a demand. There's a sex buyer. Someone is paying for sex. I mean, we've got a girl in our recovery program, 15 years old, sold to a trafficker by a family member, sold to a trafficker, was exploited for a year and a half between brothels all over Johannesburg. They made a fake ID for this girl. Police came to raid it, gave the fake ID, and police obviously didn't identify this young girl as being a victim of trafficking. So, that's the three things I would say. There's much more to say on it.
Sure. Oh, right. I see we've lost one of the guests. We're going to try to bring that particular guest back, Hilary Leong. Let me stay with you then, Emma, for a little while. You're mentioning the three: money, corruption, and there's a demand. So if we know that, and we know that South Africa obviously is one of these countries where country of sourcing, country of transit, and a country of destination. I mean, that's scary in essence. We're basically all three combined. Where then and what then of the conversations with government that should be happening? Where then is government's intervention? Let's just bring that particular color into the space at the moment. How do you perceive government's activities around this from where you sit? What are they doing? Are they doing enough? What are the interventions? Whether the legislation is strong enough? Let's just color in the government space for me a little bit.
Yeah, so I do think opposite legislation is there, and I think it's good. It can always be improved. Policies can be written and tightened up. But the whole thing in South Africa is the laws are there, but are they implemented? Are they actually practically implemented? One thing that we've unfortunately encountered with working with human trafficking, we don't have specialized units You know, we've got DPCI, but you need specialized units within law enforcement that are trained specifically on human trafficking. It falls under organized crime. But so law enforcement are not always trained, investigating officers are not always trained skillfully to investigate these cases, build up enough evidence to actually see the case through up to prosecution, where you get to a point where the evidence is so good that the victim doesn't need to testify. But we're not there yet. I mean, even when it comes to online intelligence and you know, building up that, because these women that are exploited are exploited online. They are on online websites. You know, there must be a footprint that law enforcement can strengthen and train. So government needs to strengthen. I think law enforcement is the first point of doing that, and then obviously our legislation and taking that further. And then also when we look at the aftercare programs of the survivors, I think that there's a big gap in our aftercare programs and actually giving sufficient support for and then South Africa is a pivotal point where we're talking about decriminalizing, you know, prostitution. When we talk about children that are being trafficked, I have seen the trauma of a child that was trafficked for a year and a half or longer in Brussels. And if we are saying, okay, it's legal, you know, are these traffickers not going to come to South Africa and say, listen, we're already making South Africa our playground. And the scary thing is it's our women, it's our South African women that they're exploiting.
Sure. Let me go to Hillary. Hillary, we lost you for a second, but I'm really glad you're back. Hillary, the nature and scope of this particular, crisis, call it, you know, if we need to call it a national disaster, like we're going to be calling ESCOM a national disaster, but you know, the extent of human trafficking, do we actually understand in South Africa the nature and scope of it? Is there enough research done into it? Is there enough, you know, people, you know, engaging in the kind of, you know, gravity that it does engulf in this particular country? How do we get to understanding that, of course, it is a massive problem in the country? Do we have enough research? The nature and scope of it, how do we determine that?
So we definitely don't have enough research. It is a truly an untouched social ill, if I can use the word untouched, or people are scared to touch that area. Dangers involved and surrounding it. Also, the complexity of identifying it. So, again, you bring about awareness, education, so the public is aware, your normal person on the street, because so many do not know, or even victims themselves, that they are victims of trafficking. And again, as Emily said, from law enforcement's angle, we've got, education and awareness. So, no, there's definitely not enough coming from civil society, coming from researchers as such. It's a very small group that is doing the research, that is on the ground, and that is able to recognize what is trafficking and what isn't. I mean, just for somebody in organizations, counter-trafficking organizations, if I just look in the small space that I'm in, and you can pick up within criminal sectors or different crimes that have been committed, and often human trafficking is omitted on those charge sheets because it is not recognized, it's not identified immediately up front, and that identification, which we know when it is reported as possible human trafficking. But that first identification of that, so that it is identified, it's a matter of education and awareness, because and knowing what human trafficking is and that definition of it. So when a crime does occur, those identifications in line with what human trafficking is should be picked up. And then obviously you will then find a different picture with regards to statistics.
You mentioned, Hillary, you mentioned that some people do not even know that they're a victim of human trafficking.
100%.
Yes.
Yes.
Give me an example of that where somebody would be, you know, being exploited. Somebody would be exploited. They're vulnerable. They're being exploited. But they would not know that they, you know, in essence, this is the broader scheme of human trafficking in essence, and that it's part of a much larger, bigger picture. Just give me an example of somebody who might out there not know that they are part of, you know, the system at the moment. But after, you know, after they hear what you say, they'll be like, oh, damn, I am being human trafficked.
I'm going to give you a situation of,
yeah.
I can actually give you an actual situation of somebody who was taken.
Mm.
And the person was taken and escaped.
Mm-hmm.
After being transported, entered into a situation where there were other young girls around,
mm-hmm.
and there was activities of the sexual nature which was being, and they were being moved from place to place, and mm-hmm. obviously going to be taken elsewhere for clients,
mm-hmm.
if you want to use that word.
Mm-hmm.
That would come and exploit them.
Mm.
This person got away years later. Mm. When this person met me and spoke to me and told me about the situation, realized what I said, but that is human trafficking. And the eyes nearly popped out.
Mm.
And I said, did you not know it's human trafficking?
Mm.
Said, no, I didn't realize at all.
Mm.
So that's a case that's never been reported because reason being the person lives in fear.
Mm.
So and there's a case. Another scenario is your gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
Gangsterism, where kids are being used under 12 years old, especially in these gangs to perpetuate crimes.
Mm.
And their payment, whatever their payment is, and there's in some cases, these kids are so desperate, or they, in their homes, they come from poor backgrounds. So whatever it is that they're getting in exchange for what they need to do, being used by the older criminal element, and they don't realize that that is exploitation and that tantamount to child trafficking as well.
Mm. I would assume that children in forced marriages also would be explained, yes. That it's cultural, and because they see it happening to other people, they would I don't want to say willingly engage, but they would engage in it but not see it as trafficking.
Exactly.
Because yes,
so there's a situation about 2 years ago of a young girl that I know personally from a shelter who after being released from the shelter, it was her time. She went back to, and she was raped. She landed up through the services. She went through being in a safe house, etc. Investigator was then placed back into, well, outside of South Africa, which was Lesotho. And family of us contacted, said there's a big fear here. And I said, what is this fear? And they said that she would be married off.
Mm.
So I said, why is that? They spoke about culture and again tradition, you know, of what is the place. So I said, but where is the concern? I said, obviously she is a child. And as you said, I said, that cannot be. Says, but our culture and our tradition.
Mm.
So I said, but you cannot, that is then something that is abuse that's taking place because it's an older person, a younger child that you sit with there's rape. It would be a tantamount to rape that's going on. I said, and it's trafficking because there's some exchange of money that's going to be taking place as well, which is perceived to be a lobola or a dowry system.
Mm.
So, and quite right, because of tradition, because of belief system that's taking place. Sure. We have a situation where a child, a young girl, was sold to a 50-year-old man coming from another country into South Africa. So there are those situations as well. And only afterwards, in that process of this child being sold to this 50-year-old man, the realization of human trafficking was not there. So it fell under the person herself did not realize that she was being trafficked. Only afterwards.
Sure.
Is when they learn that this is what human, this is actually human trafficking.
Let me go to Emma. Emma, if we don't understand the nature and scope, as Hillary is saying, and Calvin, I'm going to come to you, Calvin, but if we don't understand the nature and scope and the abuse and the vulnerability, and we're not talking enough about it, there's not enough training also, as you've also mentioned, and of course, there's the whole problem of just being it omitted on the charge sheets, as now has been mentioned. Translating all of that uncertainty into policy is going to be very, very difficult. And I say that because there are numerous reports. Also, when they mention South Africa, suggest that government does not fully comply with the minimum standards for, of course, the elimination of trafficking. And that's in one of the reports, that government does not fully comply with the minimum standards for the elimination of trafficking. And I can only take it back then to a translation of, if you don't understand the nature and scope, you can't translate that into policy. But the report does say we're making significant strides to do so, but of course we're not even complying. What's your take on that, Emma?
Yeah, so it's a very big problem in South Africa at the moment, because we have to understand we have to protect the vulnerable in South Africa and in every country. But comparing to other countries at the moment, we've been downgraded for a second year in a row, not complying to the minimum standards. So, yes, unfortunately, we have to address the problems first. But how do we build as a country? Where do we find the solutions then? What are we... Because we can see the problem, and human trafficking is not just, it's a high priority crime. It's a crime against a human being. It's slavery. I always think about, the ANC fought so hard against slavery. Why aren't we fighting harder for fighting modern day slavery? This is a form of slavery, but it's affecting the most vulnerable. We see slavery in the world everywhere, but why aren't we fighting harder for and just with more fierce and passion? And there's a lot to learn from other countries, not only America, but countries like Israel. There's a lot of countries that are actually fighting on the forefront in human trafficking. South Africa needs to sort of wake up and just say, what is our plan? What is our prevention? Yes, part of the prevention work, is important. I think the Department of Social Development has a massive responsibility. Our NGOs to bring prevention in our schools. Because if we look at exploitation, a lot of the exploitation and trafficking starts online, starts on Instagram, starts on WhatsApp, starts on social media. Our young teenage girls are extremely vulnerable. We've seen a report from Interpol giving feedback saying, okay, our young girls are being exploited on Instagram and WhatsApp. Those are the platforms. And when we talk about slavery, we have to understand the following. Yes, kidnappings are involved. But it's a grooming process. It's a sexual grooming process that preys where trafficker will prey on the vulnerabilities of these women or these young girls, and it's not only the girls. I mean, we're looking at boys as well when we look at labor trafficking. That's in that report, it's not being addressed properly. South Africa is not addressing labor trafficking properly. So, but that grooming process by saying, okay, but this girl, it's not only a physical entrapment, but now there's a psychological, mental entrapment where the predator has groomed her either into a lover-boy relationship where they suddenly control, where suddenly he's playing manipulative game, saying, listen, you need to pimp yourself. I'm going to pimp you out now because you need to pay for the rent. And that's a grooming process. And then she ends up in an exploited situation. So, yes, South Africa, part of the civilians, government, law enforcement, we have to have, this is a state of emergency for our country, unfortunately.
Sure.
Have to wake up.
Let me bring Stembiso into the conversation. And Stembiso is in Durban. Stembiso, you've been listening?
Yes, I have been listening.
Yes.
Attentively so. One of the subjects that is close to my heart, one of the guests mentioned the fact that South Africa is about to decriminalize prostitution. Mm. Others call it sex work. Let me call it prostitution.
Mm.
You know, and I just wanted to, you know, check whether they are intending to contribute and make submissions to the bill that is out.
Mm.
You know, and I'm asking this because from where I'm sitting
mm-hmm.
and standing, we kind of know what the issues are,
mm.
but our hands are tied,
mm.
like in as far as, you know, advocating for change in human trafficking and prostitution, because, like, if you raise those issues, you know, you are anti-sex workers, you get blackmailed at mm. the university, you know, in the funding sectors and all of that.
Mm.
But you know that decriminalizing sex work, you know, is giving way for human trafficking. And
mm.
actually, it does not benefit the women who are in the trade.
Mm.
It benefits the pimps, you know, the brothels, the drug, you know, traffickers, you know, women, people who sell organs and all of that. Women get nothing
mm.
like out of this whole, you know, decrim that we're talking about.
Mm.
You know, and the colleagues that are there in studio, they will tell you that sex industry is the biggest, second biggest industry in modern history after the arms industry.
Mm.
You know, so it's a huge industry. You know, and I'm just, yeah, I mean, I'm very commenting on it because
mm.
I get goosebumps
mm.
when
mm.
I think about it.
Stimbi, so let me ask you this. I've got you on the line now, so I'm not going to let you go that easily. The theme that's coming across as well, the narrative that's beginning to shape also, and I do want to, you know, talk about the governmental aspect, because that ultimately is how government views it is key to trying to solve it. When we say trafficking is not a priority problem for South Africa, and in essence that's the narrative then, because the baseline research has not been conducted, the kind of nature and scope, as I mentioned earlier, is not understood. We know that it's happening, as you say, but we don't know the extent to which it's happening. We don't know the particular routes that people are either trafficking on, and we don't know how. We know people are here, Chinese are here, the Russians are here, you know, East Europeans are here. They're being prostituted, but also our women are being prostituted in those particular countries. So we know all of it is happening. But then if government does not have a particular idea to the extent of it, or understand how it's actually happening, then we have a bigger problem than we actually, you know, have to admit. Because, as you say, second biggest to the arms deal, but we don't understand it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think the government understands it.
Mm.
You know, and I'm having difficulty, you know, like agreeing with the fact that you do not know the extent of the problem.
Okay,
because
sure.
Because we do have databases of women and girls
mm.
who are missing. And there are these international, you know, reports that, like,
then,
the one
then,
the colleagues are talking
sure.
about.
Then if so then, Stimbi,
yeah.
So if government understands it, if government
mm.
knows to the extent to which it's happening, why the lack of the kind of intervention that, you know, Hillary and Calvin and Emma are talking about? Why that particular space then?
The answer is, I don't know. Maybe there
mm.
isn't, like, enough,
mm.
you know, advocacy that is coming,
mm.
you know, from the
mm.
ground. And advocacy that is, you know, alternative to the advocacy from the lobby that is promoting full decriminalization of sex work.
Mm.
Because, I mean, the international, they will have, like, the networks, you know, that, you know, these sort of people come from here to here and they transition through South Africa, and it's a value chain. You go as a drug, you know, a carrier, you become a prostitute, you become a surrogate, you know, and then in the end, it's either your organ is sold somewhere
mm.
or, you know, you come back to your country as, you know, something. Like, the information is out there,
mm.
you know, and with this decriminalization, like, we have not sat down and, like, thought about who is driving this particular agenda and who is benefiting from this agenda.
Mm.
And why are we not exploring other alternatives? Because countries like Sweden, Canada, you
mm.
know, and now Rwanda is coming on board. You know, their approach is saying, you know, sex work or prostitution is dehumanizing people, right?
Mm.
And it leads to all these sort of problems. Because remember, you cannot separate sex work from drugs.
Mm.
Drugs trade, right? You know, so they are saying, we want to address this problem, So let us decriminalize her. Mm. Let us not criminalize the woman who is this, they call it the sold and the bought, mm. right? You know, let us assist her to expose it to other alternatives that she could have access to, mm. but let us criminalize the buyer and the seller.
Mm.
You know, because now you're killing the demand and mm. you are, you know, reducing the numbers of people who get into the trade. You know, and I don't understand why we are having difficulty in, you know, reaching that particular, you know, goal. Is it because of the neoliberal agenda, you know, that we follow? Is it because we are throwing our hands up in the air to say we've failed to create jobs, you know, for the women, you mm. know, so let them do whatever they want to do, whether it kills them or not? Mm. You know, and I also think we failed to read the Constitution in as far as dignity and access to livelihood are concerned. Mm. And it's just throwing, you know, women in this particular situation. And I do have to say that I actually think it's not important because it's women who look like, sound like me, mm. who are the majority of women that are affected by sex trade mm. and also human trafficking.
Stimbiso, I have to say thank you so much for the call and thank you for that input.
Thank you, Denzel. Good night.
Thank you. And of course, you will keep listening, of course. Let's go to Calvin Rafari. Calvin, you've heard numerous comments so far, and you've had the benefit of listening to every single one of them, women, making those particular inputs. You're the man in this conversation, but that's neither here nor there in a conversation around human trafficking. What do you make of the kind of comments and the kind of scenarios that we've been listening to?
Yeah, no, look, apparently this particular report is the first preliminary report. The second report or the final report is coming out in March.
Mm.
But what they've so far gathered is very worrying.
Mm.
And all we can say to summarize all these things is to say there is no political willingness mm. in all this particular crime.
Mm.
First of all, our borders, porous borders, they are open to everybody. There's a lot of corruption there. And you go to the likes of your court, there's brown envelopes, we must admit it. When they say there's brown envelopes, now why are we also saying there's no political willingness?
Mm.
This type of a crime, it involves a lot of money and high-ranking officials, some which are rotten apples in the police force, and some high-ranking political associates or members as well.
Mm,
mm. I mean, I wish to see the March report when it comes out, if they're going to cover the underworld in Cape Town, because that place is also rife with this particular crime.
Mm.
Now, if you speak of Joburg, the upmarket, where they've mentioned some of the suburban areas, most of the houses there with big walls, they are owned by big fishes. I mean, mm. and that's where the crime is committed, behind those walls.
Mm.
And you go to places like Kempton Park, your Benoni, any places, suburbs around the airport, the international airport. There's a lot of human traffic. And we had the privilege to sometimes even trace some of the suspects and go on raid with the police, because that's what we do sometimes. And guess what? Most of those people, they don't get convicted, because some of the people that are human trafficked, most of them, they actually want to be human trafficked. And then they don't come and testify in court. Where now... also that the case gets thrown out in court. Or if the case is thrown, it's weakened by this so-called brown envelopes or technicality. I mm. mean, look at it now, even with some of the rape issues or rape cases in South Africa, we've got a backlog of DNA, and we were promised that by the end of January, which is tomorrow, by the way, or mm. in a few hours, that mm. the backlog will be sorted out. So we'll hear from our politicians from Wednesday what
sure.
they say.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is political willingness, borders, quotas is our problem, and there is no, I mean, the law enforcement with customs, they're not pulling in one stream. And this type of a crime, you need all the guys in one room. You need your hawks, you need your crime intelligence,
mm.
and you need your customs to work hand in hand. Because even though you go for a raid, you need customs to verify if the certificates you are giving to, or this, what you call the asylum that these people are carrying around, how authentic are they? And mm. they even led to a problem now of this particular kidnapping. There's a lot of kidnappings in South Africa, of which most of them are not reported, Denzel.
Mm.
And the reason why is because somebody didn't get a chance to capture them on video on their phone. And once it does like that, these people, once they kidnap one another, they even have committees where they sit. There'll be a presiding judge amongst their nationality, to sort out the dispute, and money is paid, and this one has been taken to cheap labor, and so forth and so on. Mm. Now, the most worrying, again, is the sex trafficking, the child sex trafficking. Now, that is very worrying because most of it, it derives from our kids being recruited on social media. So they get like what you call the Trojan pop-ups on their phone, and they are recruited from there onward to send photos of themselves and the like. And what happens is brothels are known in South Africa. Which brothels are known? But guess what? Even the police, sometimes when they go and raid, normal police go and raid those brothels, the high rotten officials, they'll come in. The police end up writing a statement that who authorized you to raid this place? Because it's a big money issue of this particular crime.
Mm. Let me go to Hillary. Hillary, sometimes when I'm reading the literature around this, as I've read the literature around this particular interview that we're doing right now, it seems as though the language is there in the literature, and I'll tell you why. It sounds easy because people will write, how do we end human trafficking, or how do we make an impact into human trafficking, and then things like strengthening victim protection will come up, strengthening prevention will come up, strengthening prosecution responses, strengthen policy responses, strengthening your knowledge base will come up. So it's easy to just expand and put it in the literature and write about it and talk about it. What are the real issues? Is it a monetary issue, you know, that not enough people are putting not enough money into organizations like, you know, Brave to Love and or, you know, Child Trafficking Africa, if I might say, what are the barriers then if we kind of know when the language is in the literature and it's easy to talk about it and people seemingly understand what the solutions are, why do we have such a small dent in this particular space?
You've hit the nail on the head there. Resources, yes, especially financially, in investing or funding organizations like Awareness for Child Trafficking Africa, like Brave to Love, like so many other organizations who have these programs and projects going that are so imperative to breaking the cycle. So I'm going to use my organization, Awareness for Child Trafficking Africa, as an example. We work on prevention of and breaking the cycle, and our mission is awareness and education, saving lives through that. And we, through research and stuff, have created a game, the traffic, and one for gender-based violence called No to Violence. And these are game changers in the fight against both these social ills. So again, the funding to actually implement, because it's tangible, it's not just awareness and education. You go to organizations like Brave to Love. So in all of these organizations, above just writing, giving research and saying these are figures, these are facts, this is what's happening, and you know, this is definitions of trafficking or what you can do to stop it. There are tangible actions behind it. And those tangible actions do need support. Unfortunately, we live in a world where whatever you're going to do, it needs money. It's not just going to operate on fresh air and you know, get to the next level. But because of the passion and the drive behind everybody, our organizations remain in existence. We support each other. We uphold each other in the information that is there through the cases, through trying to get to the next level. But at the end of the day, each of us still need to survive. We still need to implement those tangible aspects so that those cycles can be broken. And you ask the question, why is there so little dent? And the lady before that said maybe the problem is advocacy. So I can safely say amongst all the organizations that are there, advocacy is at its height. We work. I don't even think there's not even enough hours in the day or days in the month that you could can equate to the amount of work that is put in to counter trafficking.
Mm.
And again, the support is needed. And I think from your corporates, especially a lot of companies, you don't know. Look, human trafficking is follow the money.
Mm.
When you're approaching somebody for funding or a company, whether it's a small company, a big company, or whatever that is, you do not know on a personal level that MD, that director, or whoever is sitting behind there, are they perhaps involved in the world of trafficking?
Mm.
Are they not?
Or exploitation, yeah.
In any kind of, and you could be tapping on something. I had a, my organization had an experience a few years ago where we did apply somewhere for funding. And when they realized it was a human trafficking organization, I picked up, again, the backing off from before there was an eagerness. But when they realized it is human trafficking, there was a backing off.
Mm.
So there's several reasons that that could happen. You don't want to be associated with something that's human trafficking related because of the dangers. It's a complex crime. It's an organized crime. There's syndicates involved.
Mm.
The other thing that you can assume is that there's a possible involvement in that.
Sure.
So you back off. So these are the kind of things that us as organizations are faced with out there, and being a very difficult crime from investigation, it's not just as cut and dried as what it seems. And like we mentioned before, recognizing it's a lot of work involved, and it's quite labor intensive as well from emotional, mental, physical aspect as well, research aspect for this crime to be eradicated. And but yes, it can be.
Sure.
There is,
sure.
If we just get all the backing, and especially from government, our statistics, the stats that are, we have a systemic problem of where stats. So when you hear the crime report, quarterly crime report being read, you never hear them, our minister of saying that these are the stats on human trafficking. Gender-based violence is there, and it's broken up with rape involved.
Mm.
Within those statistics, so much of that relates to human trafficking. How much of that within a domestic violence sphere where husbands and wives are trafficking each other, trafficking their children, and things like that? Those are things that aren't coming out unless it is quite obvious.
Mm.
To the, you know, and
sure,
that's
sure.
the kind of thing. So there is where it is a big problem here with the stats from a law enforcement perspective needs to be quarterly as well and announced to our civil society, to South Africans, and saying that this is what the picture is looking like.
Sure.
If you look at the stats in this report, that comes from the National Human Trafficking Hotline, that's your 0800-222-777 line. What about, not everything goes through that line. Not every report goes through that line. Some of it goes through to your police stations.
Mm.
Where does it go to? So that is another source.
Sure.
You know? So that's okay. Why that's just from one perspective. Yes, it does get to SAP. But what about the reports that don't go through that hotline? Those aren't recorded.
Sure.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and a lot of support is needed from wherever, corporates, individuals, government, to support organizations like Brave to Love, like Awareness for Child Trafficking Africa, to get to the next level, to break these cycles.
Let me go to Emma. Emma, resources and speak to us about Brave to Love and the kind of work you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Well, yeah, so we obviously do a lot of outreach in the red light area. So we connect with women in prostitution, trying to identify the victims of trafficking and creating sort of exit programs, then first of all, women in prostitution, but then also working closely with law enforcement in rescuing the victim when she is held against her will by a pimp or where there's some sort of control. And actually right through, we do the process from the rescue right through to prosecution. So we work very closely with the aftercare program. Mm. So we, one of the first in South Africa, I know H21 also has a second state development. So government at the moment have safe houses, but they don't have a second phase aftercare program. Or women, sometimes the women would be in a safe house, but they get cabin fever, the survivor. So we try to focus on education and a long-term process for a survivor, meaning that when the girl actually goes through a long-term process, she's also ready to then testify against the trafficker because she's going through the psychological support that she needs, the you know, her holistic health. Rehabilitation, everything that she's needed. So that's sort of what we do. And then we're obviously very strong on the justice side of it, saying that we have to fight for justice for these victims. We focus on sex trafficking. So that's what we do. There's obviously a lot of those prevention work and things that add to that.
Sure. Yep. Emma Stimbi saw raised the issue of decriminalization. And I think you brought it up. And she was asking particular questions around that. It was like the kind of input and where is it at the moment? And do you want to speak to the decriminalization aspect a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So we're very quite outspoken about it because the last 9 years, I've been hearing the stories of so many women in prostitution. Mm. And the system of prostitution needs to be criminalized. For a woman, every woman that I've spoke to on the streets have told me they have had a gun against their head, they have been raped, they've been assaulted. And I think when we talk about legalization, those things are not going to change when we say, okay, we regulate it. We see stats like Germany that said, let's legalize it, but because, you know, let these women pay tax. But of how many of the 4,000 women that are working prostitution, you know, only a small percentage of women actually registered, and 90% of those women were foreigners. They weren't even the local women. So we see there's evidence on the table that's saying, okay, decriminalization is not going to work, but how do we find exit programs for these women? How do we find exit programs that can empower them to actually find them? Because, yes, the women are there for survival. They are, in distress. Many times, but you know, when I look at the women on the streets, and I really have so much love in my heart for them, but I cannot tell it's okay what you're doing to your body, because to have sex 10 times a day, you know, with a man, and some of these women only earn 60 rand, you know, that's not worth selling your body, you know, and they end up with HIV, STD, abuse, mental health sickness that goes part of that. But yeah, so we're obviously part of SAIL-SA. Fighting the decriminalization of prostitution because, I've got evidence and lots of years of experience working with the women out of the love and compassion, but saying, yes, it's not a job. It's not a long-term. I see the women when they turn 40, even older. You cannot sustain. Prostitution is not a job. These women, their bodies cannot handle it health-wise. So yes, but how do we as South Africans empower the women around us? How do we as the community come together? I think there's a call on the public to fight it and to also fight human trafficking. Where is our whistleblowers by saying, this is wrong, we're saying no to this, let's voice and let's fight harder. Yes, the government is there, but as civilians, as the public, let's be whistleblowers on this.
Sure. Kelvin, I'm going to give you the last word for about a minute and a half. Kelvin?
Yeah, no. Mm. Yeah, also, you know, in this human trafficking, there's a lot of drugs involved. And I like what Emma and Hilary just said, that even when you can decriminalize the issue of prostitution, there will still be a lot of drugs involved because the ladies, they will be under, most of them, they are under the substance. Like what the lady just said, that to sleep with 10 men a day. Mm. I mean, a sober person wouldn't like do that. But, you know, you go to court and then to prove your case, and then they ask you, were you of a sober mind? You know, those type of technicalities. So the problem will still persist. It won't go away. Mm. But like the lady said, there should be more of awareness and teaching our ladies around this particular crime. We fully agree. And coming to sex trafficking for our kids, I urge all parents now to start having password and PIN code of their kids. Keep on checking, because they are our kids. Keep on checking what they are up to on the phone. And if something is suspicious, just block the particular people that are communicating with, because of it is rife as well. And, you know, let's soldier on.
Mm. Kelvin, I'm going to say thank you. Thank you so much, Kelvin. Thanks for joining us here tonight on Power Perspective. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Hilary Leong. Hilary, thanks for the inputs. It's a conversation we need to bring back to Power Perspective. I have so many more questions. So, you know, we're going to have to bring it back and have that particular conversation. Hilary?
Agreed. It's quite an important conversation, and thank you so much for highlighting it. And I will look forward to the next conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you. Emma, thank you so much for joining tonight. Like I said, it's a conversation whereby I think we just need to bring you all back, and we need to finish the conversation in a second round, in a third round. So much more needs to be said. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to the listeners, too.
Thanks, Hilary. Thanks, Kelvin. Thanks, Emma. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.